We are an international show, but we are stationed here in Texas in the middle of the United States of America. And this has been a crazy week in America. I think it's one of the most dynamic midterm elections that I've ever seen. All sides taking their positions, promises of red waves and, you know, issues, big, huge issues that have been talked about for decades seem to be on the voters' minds. This is what that looked like in the news.
After a contentious election season, Election Day is finally here. Polls are open.
The stakes could not be higher.
I think investors are anticipating a big change should we get this red wave that so many people have been talking about.
Governor DeSantis is expecting a big victory tonight in his bid for another term of 4 years.
In the Senate, we're watching four critical races. They're still too close to call. Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin.
We talk about just how close these races are because any single one of them could determine control of the Senate.
Democrats have scored a major victory. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman is projected to win the Senate contest against TV's Dr. Oz.
And in the rematch between Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams, Brian Kemp won again.
Here in the battleground state of Arizona, there are two pivotal races with national implications. Republican Carrie Lake, who is running for governor, with her election denialism becoming really a central part of her campaign.
Looks like Kathy Hochul will make history as the first female elected to the state's highest office.
Senator Rand Paul, reelected to his third term in the U.S. Senate. During his victory speech, he called out Dr. Anthony Fauci several times, promising to investigate him fully in his next term.
Thanks for coming out to Dr. Fauci's retirement party.
NBC News now declaring that Ron Johnson, two-term Republican, has been reelected to a third term representing Wisconsin in the United States Senate, narrowly defeating his Democratic challenger, Mandela Barnes.
This is not going to be a red wave in Florida. It is going to be a tsunami.
Governor Ron DeSantis solidifying his second term here. The room absolutely electric as the race was officially called.
We chose facts over fear. We chose education over indoctrination. Florida was a refuge of sanity when the world went mad. We stood as a citadel of freedom for people across this country and indeed across the world.
Well, a lot of polls were showing that nearly 75% of America did not like the direction that this country was heading in. Yet it almost seemed like we were divided perfectly upon party lines. There are still counting going on as we speak. Apparently, it's really difficult to count ballots, more than I remember as a child. I think during the Pony Express, when things were delivered by horseback, we were faster at counting ballots. But for whatever reason, we're still waiting to know some of the results and whether or not the Senate will be controlled by the Republicans or the Democrats. And there was a promise of a red wave by some that doesn't seem to have come together really in any place except Florida. In Florida, there truly was a red wave across that state that was quite shocking. Now, those of you that watch this show know that I've stated I used to be a progressive liberal. I am now, actually, let me take progressive out of it. I think I was always a liberal, which leans me more towards, you know, libertarian now. That progressive part is probably what messed the entire thing up. But I'm now politically marooned. I really don't care if you're red or blue. What I care about are the issues. I'm a critical thinking voter, and I vote based on the issues and what I care about, parental rights. And really, I guess you could say I'm a one-issue voter, and that issue is freedom. In the United States of America, I vote for freedom. All right, so, but all of that being said, I want to look at this election just a little bit differently, just some of the things that we do know now. I know people want to make it red, blue, was it about Trump, you know, all these issues. But here's what I think is really interesting about the candidates that we've been following for many years now, really, in our discussions through COVID and from the high wire. First of all, let's talk about Ron DeSantis. Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida had absolutely the biggest night of everybody in the country, winning by 20 points, moving blue, people around him and districts into the red. It really was an astounding performance. Everybody in the nation agrees. Nobody won more handily than Governor Ron DeSantis. And I want to point out, and, you know, whether it was about politics or not, we've been talking about Ron DeSantis this whole time. He was the guy that came out against the masks. He came out against the lockdowns. He came out against school closures. And he really forcibly came out against the childhood COVID vaccine, especially being assisted by his Surgeon General, who I have interviewed, Dr. Joe Latipo. But just to give a sense of where Ron DeSantis was and the types of, you know, things that he was focused on right before his election. Remember, the things you're talking about 1 month out from your election, I think it means things that you feel like are important to you and important to your constituents. So look what he was saying in October. Take a look at this.
There's been a lot of questions to our office about the CDC potentially adding COVID vaccine to the childhood immunization schedule. And I know a lot of parents are concerned about that, because if that's on the immunization schedule, the fear is that schools could potentially mandate your child to get a COVID shot, even if that's not something that you want to do. So I just want to let everyone be clear, you know, as long as I'm around and as long as I'm kicking and screaming, there will be no COVID shot mandates for your kids.
I mean, really, nobody has been stronger against the COVID shot for children than Florida and Ron DeSantis and Surgeon General Joe Latipo. They had put out a study right at that time showing that they saw an increase, an 84% increased relative risk of myocarditis and pericarditis in young adults receiving that vaccine. Therefore, they stated publicly, we are against giving this to kids, in direct defiance of the CDC. And obviously, Ron DeSantis felt very comfortable indeed being in defiance, as he was one of the first states to open up, never locked down his schools. Even President Biden, you know, chastised him and said, you're going to get people killed. We're going to watch Florida. Well, we all have watched Florida. We've watched them thrive. We watched their economy thrive. We watched people move from all of the other blue states into Florida, which is maybe a question what happened in New York. Maybe too many conservatives and people that believed in freedom had moved to Florida. So I want to say this, the biggest winner of this week in the United States of America was one of the most outspoken critics of the COVID vaccine, the lockdowns and the masks. I think that says something. And while all the pundits sit around trying to figure out what happened, I think we should look at the guy that did it right throughout COVID. Another one of those figures that we have talked a lot about on this show, obviously, comes out of Kentucky. And this is the statement that was made by Senator Rand Paul as he finished his campaign and won in flying colors. This is the statement that he made to his constituents.
Thanks for coming out to Dr. Fauci's retirement party. No bureaucrat. Are you listening, Dr. Fauci? No bureaucrat should be above the law. No bureaucrat should be allowed to deny information to Congress, and no bureaucrat should be allowed to lie to Congress. When I return to the Senate as chairman, I promise you this, the COVID cover-up will end. Yeah! And I promise you this, I will subpoena every last scrap of paper from our friend, Dr. Fauci. At least 6 million people died worldwide from COVID, and Congress has not had one hearing into the origins of the virus. As chairman, I will not only hold Dr. Fauci accountable, we will finally investigate why your tax dollars were sent to fund dangerous research in Wuhan, and we will make sure it never happens again.
You get a sense that this COVID pandemic and the lies and cover-ups are on Rand Paul's mind. Obviously, they are. He made no bones about it as he discussed that throughout his campaign, and he has been victorious here in the United States of America. I think, again, that that means something. People can talk about what they think is going on, but this is, again, one of our representatives that has been very critical of Tony Fauci and the approach towards the pandemic, including the fact that he himself talked about not getting the vaccine since he had already caught COVID, therefore standing for natural immunity from the beginning. But I will say this, that though they've been bold, Ron DeSantis has not been on the high wire yet. Rand Paul has not come on to the high wire yet. We're looking forward to that in the future. But there is one politician, one representative here in America that has taken everything to a level like nobody else has. Not only appearing here on the high wire and having a great conversation with me, but hosting some of the most important conferences in front of the Senate in the United States of America. Of course, bringing in the injured, not only talking about problems with the vaccine, but talking about the people that he saw and met with, talking about their injuries. An incredible hearing that he held, and then the doctor's second opinion conference where he brought in world-renowned doctors, all putting their careers on the line to speak to our government. Of course, I'm talking about Senator Ron Johnson, who has boldly gone where no man in America has gone before. This is the statement he made just going into the elections himself in the interview that I did with him in Washington, D.C. Take a look at this.
Is there any sense in the Republican Party right now coming into an election coming up here that there may be a real, you know, power to running on the fact that we're going to investigate Fauci, we're going to look into gain of function, we're going to look into this vaccine that never delivered what you were promised? Is there any sense that there's some power there?
I have no doubt that Rand will come and he'll focus on gain of function and the origin of COVID. The only reason I'm not grilling Fauci is he never comes before my committees. Mm. If he came before my committees, I would be asking him some tough questions. I'll just be honest with you. If I do survive and we take over the majority, I'd be the chairman of the permanent subcommittee investigations. I've laid the foundation for the investigations I'm going to want to do on this subject. And why I'm running again, it's got to be exposed. And there aren't a whole lot of people like myself who've been dedicated to exposing the corruption.
You know, when you spend some time with Senator Ron Johnson, you realize, you know, what an investment it is to put your life into service all the time away from your family, your loved ones. Senator Ron Johnson's had a brilliant life. He's been successful. He could walk off into retirement. But that statement to me, that the reason I'm coming back, even though he had sort of promised his wife we're going to go two terms and be out, he decided to run a third term because of these issues we've been discussing right here on the high wire. People in harm's way, malfeasance by pharmaceutical companies. We're talking about all sorts of corruption, as we talked about here, taking over our government, lying to the people, putting out a product that wasn't properly safety tested, and then not taking care of those that have been injured by that product. There's no one that stands to do more damage right now in the position after having won than Senator Ron Johnson, and it is my absolute honor to be joined by him right now. Senator Johnson, let me just say how incredibly thankful we are for your service and how excited we are that you won. Congratulations.
Well, Della, I certainly appreciate all the good work you've done around this subject and look forward to working with you and, you know, the other people that have courage. And, you know, unfortunately, there have not been as many as we all would like to see in terms of the medical community, but I understand the threats are after. Take a look at what they're doing to Dr. McCulloch right now.
Yeah.
Taking away his certifications, trying to bankrupt him. So I understand the threats. I understand, the COVID cartel, the power they have. But this was the main reason I ran for office again. I've been with the vaccine injured, Bree and Joel and Maddie and Cheryl and Steph. I mean, you know them. You've interviewed these people too. How could you possibly turn your back on these people who are just, they want to be heard, they want to be believed, they want to be treated, they want to be healed. And until the powers to be in Washington, D.C. and the federal health agencies, the medical establishment, until they actually acknowledge the fact that these vaccine injuries are real, and they are real, and they are severe, and people are dying, these people are having a very difficult time getting help.
You know, it's absolutely true. And how many more will be injured in the future, not just by this vaccine, but this approach by government? If we're going to call everything an emergency use authorization, we're seeing with other drugs now, Paxlovid, things like that, things that are proving, you know, benefit of hindsight to have real deleterious effects on humanity. This approach has got to change. There is clearly something wrong with our regulatory agencies that are not protecting citizens from the industry, but protecting the industry from the citizens in blocking our ability to sue. There's no free market forces involved here. So as you look into that and you were holding this in mind, I mean, this was a long drawn out. I mean, your boat was hanging there. I was up till late at night. And I'll be honest, it was clear that, you know, a lot of the things that were promised in this election and, you know, the type of wave that they expected, you know, sort of going against, you know, the current administration wasn't really happening. But my wife and I were there and I just kept saying, I just want to know about Ron John. I don't really care, you know, about one election. What was it like the moment, because you were patient, when they finally made the call? What is it like to be a senator in that moment? What are the emotions that happened there?
Well, it was far more emotional in 2016, where we called my race within about an hour and a half of the polls closing. This thing dragged on through the night into the following morning. So it was just a matter of a little bit of exhaustion. We knew the result. The network simply wouldn't call the race. They knew the result as well. They could have called this thing probably midnight, 1 o'clock, but they didn't. I think they're being pressured by my opponent's campaign, see if there's some way they could manufacture some votes. And I'd also say, Dell, I think the mainstream media just hates my guts so much. They didn't want to give me that satisfaction either, being able to make an acceptance speech and talk about what my priorities were. So, you know, in the end, all we really did is issue a statement. This campaign was over. And I turned my attention immediately to start contacting doctors. I was very pleased, by the way, Dr. Corey, Dr. Merrick, Dr. Susan Rohr came from South Dakota to my election event. They were the stars of the show. I'm not one of these candidates that sits in a hotel room. You know, I go in the ballroom and thank everybody, but it was just fun to watch how many people came there and were just, you know, starstruck by those heroes. And they were heroes. I mean, you know them. Yeah. These doctors had been vilified. They've put their careers on the line, and yet they stood strong, and they had the courage and compassion to treat not only COVID patients, but provide the public the information that the public needs. So I'm just honored to be standing with those individuals and want to work with them to continue to expose the truth. And you know, Dell, one thing we all have to take some solace in is, as frustrating as it's been, as slow as the progress has been, we should take some comfort in the fact that there aren't many toddlers that are getting the vaccine, because the word is getting out and parents are exercising, I think, proper caution with this experimental therapy.
You know, it's true, and we are having success. And when people try to say, you know, I always say, stop saying the they as though we're outnumbered. You know, there has been real shifts, and you represent one of the biggest shifts that's ever happened in this conversation. And I want to say on behalf of the people that I represented, you know, as a journalist back when I made Vax and first got into this discussion of vaccine injury, these families all across this country and all around the world have been said that they're lying, that they're crazy, that they're making this up. And so I wonder if you're aware, if you think about it, there's clearly you have a lot of issues you represent. You represent a lot of different constituents. There's all sorts of things going on in this country. But I can officially say that you are the first politician that we have ever had representing the truth about vaccine injury and running on it. You stood in it all the way through COVID. You had, as we said, you had Brie Larson and all, you know, all these different vaccine injured in front of our own Senate. And then you stood in that as you spoke to me and said, the reason I'm running is to try and end this. Do you realize that you are representing a group of people that have been sidelined and silenced for, you know, at least two decades, if not longer? And now you are representing a new shift in the conversation. And the fact that you've won standing in that means so much to so many people that were told there would never be any hope for them.
Well, I absolutely do realize that, because one of the main reasons I won is because I got the financial support from people all over the country that were vaccine injured. I was, you know, one of the top fundraisers online because of those people that appreciated what I had done. And, you know, when you have $100 million spent against you, more than $100 million spent to convey lies, distort anything you say, assassinate your character, you need the resources to fight back. And a lot of the vaccine injured community, you know, stepped up the plate and provided me those types of resources. But, you know, Del, to me, as soon as I started seeing these VAERS numbers, and this was probably late March, early April, and there are a few thousand deaths. And I was comparing that to the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine off the VAERS system, the FDA adverse event system. And there's such a clear difference. You go back to, 1976, I believe it was the swine flu vaccine. Yeah. They shut that program down after 400 or 500 cases of Guillain-Barré disease, a couple dozen deaths. And here we are up to, we're going to thousands. I asked Francis Collins about this in person. I said, well, aren't you concerned? And he just blew it off. He said, you know, Senator, people die. So, I mean, just the callousness, the complete willful ignorance of our federal health agencies certainly opened my eyes. And then, you know, my event with the, Brian with Cheryl and Maddie in Milwaukee in June of 2021. And again, what the mainstream media did to me there, they put my picture above the fold in every Gannett paper in Wisconsin with the headline, "So Fundamentally Dangerous." And you start realizing the power of the media and what they have done. And then you read books like Dissolving Illusions, Turtles All the Way Down, Bobby Kennedy's The Real Anthony Fauci, and you start educating yourself. So, no, you become a real skeptic real quick. And, you know, it's not courage on my part. It's outrage. And it's pursuit of the truth, which is what we really ought to be doing here. So this is just trying to uncover and expose the truth. That's, I think, what the American people deserve.
So, I mean, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know this has been an exhausting experience, I'm sure. And I just want to, you know, obviously we are so thankful as we look forward. I mean, I want you to know, not only did you, you know, have so many people's support going into this election, but you now have the support of, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans now, and millions, if not billions around the world, as you are leading one of the most important discussions, investigations we've seen. Uh-oh. Oh, there we are.
Something happened.
Okay, very good. And so I just want to just ask you, as we are watching this vote count come in, there's still a significant, you know, issue at foot. What will be the difference in what you can do should the Republicans, you know, gain the Senate versus if they don't move in that sort of majority position? Does that have a great effect on your work?
Well, first of all, I'm going to pursue this whether in the majority or the minority. With the majority, I'd be chairman of the permanent subcommittee investigations. I'd have the gavel. I'd have full subpoena power. But if I don't have that, I'll continue to do events. I'm talking to the doctors right now about assembling a convening gathering in Washington, D.C. Of all the doctors, all the medical researchers, you know, have a day meeting where we just assemble and organize what is known, what the public needs to know first, you know, how we need to convey it, what are the next steps. And then what I'd like to do the following day is hold another event like Second Opinion to update the public in terms of what the current state of knowledge is. So, again, whether I get the gavel or not, we're going to start pursuing this immediately.
Well, that's incredibly exciting. I have said that I won't rest until, you know, we see, you know, Tony Fauci behind bars. I know it's a tall order, but, man, this guy has got to be held accountable. So do the Deborah Birxes and the, you know, Redfields and, you know, all of these guys that are a part of the corrupt part of this government. It's great knowing that we got a guy now. We got a guy inside of the Beltway. It's so exciting. I wasn't able to really get into this right before the election because we're a nonprofit. But now that you're elected, I just want to say the high wire is so excited, and we want to congratulate you on the victory. And we look forward to working with you as we uncover and untangle this mess so we can get back to scientific integrity inside the government of the United States of America. Congratulations and thank you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for all your efforts. Take care.
Absolutely. Take care. Talk to you soon.